Good evening, everybody. Is that too loud? Okay. How about that? Better? Okay. Hello to everybody. About 7 months ago, I retired. For the record, I'd like to say that those who said I wouldn't like it and that I would be bored are crazy people. Retirement's good stuff. I don't have as much free time as I thought I would have, but I have a lot more free time than I did when I was working. In anticipation of retirement, I'd been thinking for a while about what I wanted to do when I retired. Traveling the world would be nice, but once you retire, you don't have any money, so that kind of rules that out. Nevertheless, there's some more reasonable things that I've been planning on for retirement. Perhaps the biggest is to do some writing, especially writing what might be of use in Bible class programs and small congregations. During my life, I've been part of and exposed to a lot of small congregations. Oftentimes, the teaching resources that they have are either limited or overburdened, and a lot of times, a very few people are assigned to teach all the Bible classes each and every quarter that goes by. So one of my goals has been to prepare some quality Bible class material and make it available both in book and video form, and make it available to these small congregations. I hope to make the video format or DVD format available basically either at about cost or even free of charge to perhaps hundreds of these smaller congregations, so that overburdened teachers can have a quarter off, and the congregation can benefit from some hopefully quality material from an outside source. And there are five topics that I hope to do this. In this manner. Now, none of that may actually happen. I found that during retirement that it's easy to get distracted. Look, a chicken. But those are my plans anyway. Now that I'm retired and I am what some of the grossly misinformed younger people refer to as old, I've been thinking a bit about things, about the idea of things that old people can do. And that's the topic of the lesson this evening. I want to present some ideas of things that older people can do. Now, most of these are ideas that are appropriate for any age, but hopefully they'll be good ideas for people like me who are either now retired or nearing retirement age. Not all of them are going to suit you. That's okay. There are some of these that I have no intention of even thinking about doing myself. But hopefully it'll give you some ideas of how you can better serve, better contribute, better glorify God with your lives. I think that just doing one or two of them and doing them well can make a great difference in the church and in the world at large. There are a lot of people who accomplish major things primarily at an advanced age. One of my daughters a few weeks ago sent me an article about a 105-year-old Minnesota woman by the name of Mary Mark, and excerpts from her story go like this. A Minnesota woman who celebrated her 105th birthday on Monday hasn't let her age get in the way of one of her most treasured projects, sending letters of encouragement to inmates in correctional facilities. "I surely do enjoy writing the letters, and I've been doing it for many years," she told ABC News. "They're in prison, but they're working. They hope to make it." Mary Mark's been writing letters to prisoners for over 20 years. She initiated the project after responding to a notice in a newspaper enlisting pen pals for prison inmates. "I think at one point she was writing to about 50 prisoners. When she was 89 years old, she was called down to Oklahoma to testify on behalf of a prisoner on death row because she had been writing to him for such a long time." She says she just offers the inmates love and encouragement and lets them know that they're not alone. As for additional birthdays, Sister Mary Mark said she'd be happy spending many more on this earth, so long as she can continue sending her letters. "As long as I can write, I'll do it," she said. Before talking about some of the specific things that we can do for God, I want to give some examples of people who have done things later in life on a more secular, non-religious basis to show that accomplishing great things is still possible, even if it's been a while since you've been a teenager. There are a number of more well-known examples in our day and time that have accomplished a lot later in life. For example, Colonel Harlan Sanders of KFC fame. From one source, his story goes like this. Harlan Sanders experienced a very difficult life as a child. He was born into poverty. His father died when he was young, and after his mother remarried, he was severely beaten by a stepfather. Needing to escape the abuse, he went to live with his uncle. Wanting a better life, he falsified his date of birth to enlist in the U.S. Army. After he was honorably discharged, he moved to Alabama and tried to have the quality of life he didn't have as a child. He married in 1908, started a family, and was holding down a steady job, but things weren't in the stars for him to have the dream life that he'd hoped for. While he was away on a business trip, his wife gave away all their belongings, moved back to her parents' home, and divorced him. Over the years, Sanders had many jobs, including steamboat pilot, streetcar conductor, insurance salesman, railroad fireman, farmer, and service station operator. Then in the midst of the Great Depression, he bravely opened a gas station and a small restaurant named Sanders Court and Cafe, where he served family-style meals. His popularity grew, and he moved the restaurant into a much larger site where he worked on a recipe for pressure cooker chicken that cooked much faster than being fried. But in 1955, another dark cloud hovered over his life when an interstate was built near his restaurant that deflected over 75% of his clientele. At the age of 65, when most people are retiring, he closed his doors and found himself flat broke. The one and only thing the colonel had left in his arsenal was his famous chicken recipe. He believed in it so much that he took his first Social Security check and went on the road to sell the recipe to restaurants. As they say, the rest is history. By 1964, there were over 600 Colonel Sanders Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises in the U.S., Canada, and England. Another one I might mention is a man by the name of Ray Kroc. You may not recognize the name Ray Kroc. He was representing a company when two brothers ordered a large number of mixers for milkshakes. He wondered why a restaurant would need that many mixers for a milkshake, so he checked further about the company, and he liked what he saw. He told the brothers they should start expanding their company by franchising it, but they weren't really into the idea. But he thought this is a good idea, and so at the age of 59, he bought the small company, and he began franchising it. The brothers' names that he bought the company from, by the way, were Dick and Mac McDonald. Ray Kroc would keep the original name of the company, McDonald's, and the rest is history. Another person who became successful at a later age was Winston Churchill. He was named the greatest Briton of all time in a poll in 2002, but success wasn't always a friend to Winston Churchill. He had a speech impediment when he was young. As a younger man, he had financial problems. He faced defeat in politics and was essentially deemed persona non grata in England for over 10 years. But eventually, his persistence and his love for his country enabled him to play an important role in the history of England and the history of the world. He was brought back from the political wilderness at the age of 65 to become Prime Minister of England, perhaps the greatest Allied leader in the Second World War. After the war, there amongst many honors, he was given a Nobel Prize for Literature, and he was also the first person to be made an honorary citizen of the United States. His having a speech impediment is kind of ironic because it was the oratorical skills that helped encourage the West to stand against the Nazis. Among the Churchill quotes that you may have heard are these: "We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender." And again, he said, "Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour." In a graduation speech during the war, Churchill said, "Never give in. Never give in. Never, 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 never." We may be old, but don't give in. Great things are still possible. Never give in. Never give up. I want to tell you a story about a lady by the name of Clara. You may remember years ago when candy bars were large and they only cost a nickel. You may remember then that inflation gradually hit. And for a long time, the price of candy didn't go up. You can go into the candy store and still be the same size wrapper and everything there. And you'd get it, you notice that the wrapper wasn't completely full anymore. The candy bar had started to shrink. And it began to shrink and shrink until it became pretty ridiculous. And eventually they upped the price to 10 cents and you'd get a full candy bar again. The same thing happened much later with hamburgers. Some restaurants would, hamburger chains would keep the hamburger price the same, But if you peel back the bun, you notice that the burger part would get smaller and smaller. That turned around in part because of a former manicurist who was making ends meet doing ads and commercials. Clara Peller, the ripe old age of 81, appeared in Wendy's commercials and asked, "Where's the beef?" And the hamburger market has never been quite the same. You go to get a hamburger now, you open it up, it's a full-size hamburger. Another example, the phrase, according to Hoyle, is associated with the rules of board games and card games, and Hoyle refers to Edmund Hoyle, who in 1742 began to publish rules for various games. When you wonder what the rules are for a particular game, you turn to the writings of Edmund Hoyle, who is the recognized and authoritative expert. And he was 70 years old when he published his very first book. Another example is Grandma Moses. She was born in 1860. She was one of 10 children, only five of whom survived childhood. She only went to school in the summer because their family was so poor they couldn't afford warm clothes for her to go to school in the winter. So she went to school in the summer. And at the age of 12, she started working as a housekeeper. She later worked on a family farm. In later life, she took up embroidery as a hobby. But severe arthritis caused her to have to give up embroidery when she was 76 years old. Her sister suggested that maybe painting would work, where it wouldn't bother her fingers quite so bad. So she started painting in earnest in her late 70s. She initially sold her paintings for $3 to $5 a piece. Before she died, they were selling for $8,000 to $10,000 a piece. And she died in 1961 at the age of 101. After her death... Hello? Are we still alive? Okay. After her death in 2006, one of her paintings sold for more than $1 million. Among other honors and awards, in 1969, a Grandma Moses postage stamp was put out by the United States Post Office, and one of her paintings now resides in the White House. And it all started because her arthritis was so bad that she could no longer do embroidery. Other examples of success late in life could be given. Nola Oaks graduated from college at the age of 95. She received her master's degree at the age of 98, and she became a graduate teaching assistant at the age of 100. If you've eaten popcorn, you've probably eaten some of Orville Redenbacher's popcorn. He started his company at the age of 63. There's a man by the name of Oscar Swan, who was a marksman who entered the 1908 Olympics and the shooting competition. He was 60 years old at the time, and he won two gold medals and a bronze medal. In the 1912 Olympics, he won a gold medal and a bronze medal at the age of 64, becoming the oldest gold medalist in Olympic history. And 8 years later, in the 1920 Olympics, he won a silver medal, making him the oldest medalist in Olympic history at the age of 70. Speaking of Olympics, in 2012, a man by the name of Salya Singh was one of the runners in the Olympic people running the Olympic torch through the streets of London for the 2012 Olympics. He was 101 years old at the time. And the reason he was chosen is because the previous year he became the first person over the age of 100 to run and finish a marathon. That's 26 miles, 385 yards. So those are some examples of people who've done unusual things later in life, but we find a lot of examples in the Bible, too. For example, Moses was 80 years old when he went before Pharaoh and said to him, "Let my people go." Jacob, the father of the 12 tribes, was an old man when he led his family down to Egypt to see his son Joseph, and through that action, his family escaped famine, and the promised line of the Messiah continued. Caleb, one of the two faithful spies in the Exodus, was 85 years old when he finally received his inheritance in the Promised Land. Although he was only about 40 years old when he spied out the land, he and Joshua, who was probably about the same age, later helped lead the Israelites during the conquest of the Promised Land at a very advanced age. Naomi, the mother-in-law of Ruth, was apparently an older woman when she made the decision to return to Bethlehem from Moab. Through that decision, her daughter-in-law Ruth met Boaz and became a part of the family line of the promised Messiah. In Luke chapter 2, Anna the prophetess, who was 84 years old, when she spoke of him to whom all were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. Abraham was already 100 years old when Isaac was born, but it was much later in life, many years later, when he gave instructions about the future of his son Isaac. He sent one of his servants to get a wife from his homeland so that Isaac wouldn't choose a wife from among the Canaanites. In Mark chapter 12 and Luke chapter 21, it was likely an elderly woman whom Jesus chose to teach an object lesson about giving. It was she who gave all that she had. Two coins that are called mites in the King James Version. So we have the story of the widow's mites. The Apostle John was probably in his 90s before he wrote any of the five books in the New Testament that are ascribed to him. And Noah was 600 years old when he finished building the ark through which the human race was preserved. So just because a person is no longer a spring chicken doesn't mean that that person's usefulness is ended. So how are some ways we can serve today? I want to mention a few real-life possibilities. As I said earlier, not all of them are going to suit you, and that's okay. But hopefully it'll give you some ideas of how you can better serve, better contribute, and better glorify God with your lives. Pick one if you want to, or two, and do them well. Make a difference in the church. Make a difference in the world. Make a difference in eternity. One suggestion, WEI, World English Institute, correspondence courses. By offering English language courses using the Bible as text, many have been brought to Christ. It's one of the things that I hope to get involved with personally again at some point. I did it some years ago when it was done entirely by snail mail. And as I understand it, things are a whole lot easier now that it's done online. You can be following in the footsteps of people like Jim Wagner and Betty Allen and have thousands of students over the years. Or you can choose to just have one. And you might make an eternal difference with that one. It's worth considering. Another suggestion, speak to and encourage the children. That might not seem like that big a deal, but I think that it could be. When I was young, we had a preacher whom I think that the grown-ups eventually had some problems with. But the children liked him. The reason that we liked him is that he talked to us. He was the only one of the big people who talked to us. That's not actually true. There were actually other big people who talked to us. They would say things like, "Don't run in the building." But the preacher took time to talk to us about less confrontational things. For a child, that made going to church more desirable. It was a place where we knew that there'd be a friendly big person who we could count on to come speak to us in a friendly way. It was one of the things that colored our picture of what church was. It helped give us a positive view of what church was. Who knows how many people's future was affected because of a simple act of speaking and being friendly to those whom all the other big people never bothered with. Another thing we could do is show hospitality. Wendy and I went to Albania in 1999 along with our daughters to work on a World English Institute campaign. While we were there, one of our students invited us to her apartment for snacks. We went and she and her roommate gave us a very nice assortment of fresh fruits and that country's equivalent of carbonated soft drink. And they weren't eating, and we encouraged them to take part, but they refused. We found out later that it's a custom in Albania to keep in your refrigerator, and in the case of fresh fruit, go out and buy items to provide for guests. We also found out that our hosts didn't take part themselves because they couldn't afford to. We did notice we were leaving that the only thing in their bedroom was a mattress. But it was their custom to show hospitality, even if they really couldn't afford to. So showing hospitality is another thing we can do. Another thing we can do is send cards. Perhaps you get cards from the church staff on your birthday. Now, that's a really nice gesture. But let's face it, they're the church staff, and it's your birthday, and after the first year or two, it's almost semi-expected. But what if you get one out of the blue from someone that you didn't expect that had really nice things to say about you? Wouldn't that lift your spirits quite a bit? Wendy and I received a card a few months back from someone in the congregation. I won't mention who wrote it, and you probably couldn't guess. That's part of what made it special. Here's what it said. "Dear ones, you all are a blessing to me and many others. I thank you and appreciate your service to the Lord and His people. You're shining a light that helps those who have need. I'm sure heaven is rejoicing and someday will say, 'Welcome home.' I'm sure He'll keep you here for many years so others will feel joy. God bless you. You are my sunshine. I love you much." Now, don't you know that made our day and our week? That kind of gesture is a really good thing. Something else can do is to prepare the Lord's Supper. It's there. You see, these aren't magical containers. They don't fill themselves back up automatically. But because of people like Jerry Dean and John Adams, it sometimes seems that way. It's not a very complicated task. No offense to those who do it, but it doesn't take a brain surgeon to do this. But how awkward would it be if on Sunday morning we got ready for the Lord's Supper and the containers were empty? It would take a good while to get that ready for an entire congregation. But we don't have to worry about that because there are people who've decided to take that task upon themselves every week. That's a great thing. Something else we can do? Visit sick. There are a few in this congregation who have dedicated themselves to this. I know that at least in the past, Art Edwards has been one of them. If you've been in the hospital in past years, you've probably had Art Edwards come to see you. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said something about visiting the sick. And you can be an encouragement to those who are going through rough times by doing that. For the men, we always need people to serve and worship. If you can and want to preach, preach. If you don't want to preach, lead singing. If you don't want to lead singing, then lead prayer. If you don't want to lead prayer, then read Scripture. If you don't want to read Scripture, then serve the Lord's table. If you don't want to serve the Lord's table, then join with everybody in congregational singing. If you don't want to sing, you're going to be awfully bored in heaven because we're going to be doing a whole lot of singing there. Something else that can do is to get people to lead in worship. Jerry Dean and Claude Garner have been mainstays in this, but I think that John Adams and Craig Maynard and others have helped out also. Things run smoothly because of them. But behind the scenes, things aren't always that smooth. They have to find out who's willing to serve, what they're willing to do, when they'll be in town, and if they actually showed up, you know. But everything seems so smooth because they do such a good job. They probably wouldn't mind having some help at times. If you have a little bit of computer savvy, not necessarily a lot, but a little, you can help with the computer displays on the big screen on Sunday morning where we have the announcements, the songs, and the sermon points. Like the emblems in the Lord's Supper, they don't appear magically up there. The sermons are also recorded. They don't show up in the church website for people to listen to by magic, and a lot of people enjoy having the chance to listen to those sermons. The sound system is also handled from there. It isn't something that runs on automatic. People are actually up in the booth doing that. Hey, Larry, will you wave? Wave to everybody. See? There he is, right up there. Now I'm going to imagine they could occasionally use some help or relief in that. Something else could be done is to teach. More than a couple of hundred people show up twice a week and effectively say, teach me. What a magnificent opportunity. If you can teach, what a great opportunity. Fill up hundreds of clay vessels with God's word. If you aren't willing to teach for a quarter, there are other opportunities. In the past, we've had a class, and probably we'll have one again in the future, in which the class is taught jointly by four or five or six people. And so you only have to teach four, three, maybe even just two classes during a quarter. Also, regular teachers sometimes get sick, so if you can get up one lesson, doesn't have to be on the particular topic or anything, just one standalone lesson, put it in your Bible, tell Herbert you're ready to go in case somebody's sick. And if you can't do that, tell him that, give me a day or so notice, and I'll do it. And I'm pretty sure that you'll be called on at some point if you're willing to do that. And it doesn't have to be one of the adult classes. Teaching our children is one of the most important things that we can do. When you teach your children, you change the future. Something else. Making quilts. The ladies of the congregation have made and given away between 2,000 and 3,000 quilts to those in need. It began with making quilts for poor inner city kids who had to sleep at night with their jacket on because they had no covers and their house had little heat. But since then, the ladies have given away quilts to the homeless, to disabled veterans, to those in nursing homes, and to others. It may be like our household. We don't really need any more quilts. But a lot of people have none and could really use one, and it's a great ministry. Something else you can do is clean up the auditorium. This is actually pretty simple. We have a janitorial service that comes in and does the heavy work. So all you have to do is go around and pick up the communion cups from the racks, put them in a plastic bag. If you find anything stray on the seat, you know, gather that up. That's it. Simple. Simple or not, somebody has to do it. If you want something easy, that's it. and it's needful. Something else you can do is to fix food. Perhaps it's for a family that had a family member die. Perhaps it's for a new family in town. Perhaps simply for an event at church. Now, the men will say, you know, be ye warmed and filled. But it's generally the women who make the quilts and cook the food. And a nice dish is a nice touch. How about, do you want to launch out in a new ministry that we're not currently involved with? I'm sorry, but all possible ministries have already been covered. Oh, wait a minute, maybe not. For example, how about a jail or prison ministry? I might be wrong, but I don't think they currently have one. I've lived in various places, and I've helped with such ministries in three different towns, varying from a small local jail who had trusted prisoners allowed to wander outside unsupervised in the middle of town, to a maximum security situation where they had multiple upon multiple layers of security before you could ever get in. And I know that people involved in such ministry do a great work, and they have a captive audience. Something else could be involved with is campus ministry at Maryville College. Some have been involved with this in the past, but I don't know if there are any large-scale activities that are currently being conducted. You could start one. Another way to serve is to give money. Maybe you can't teach, can't cook, don't feel comfortable with the prison ministry, don't feel comfortable going to a third world country, but perhaps you have a business talent or some extra skills, some spare time to make a little bit of extra money. Helping to send someone on a mission trip is taking part in their work. Helping to buy food for the poor is taking part in benevolent activities. One can share in God's work by making extra money and dedicating it to God's work. Something else you can do, comfort the grieving. Whether it's just being there for someone or giving them a hug or being involved in a more formal thing, like, for example, the grief care thing that Herb is associated with, having a tender heart can express itself in some very valuable ways. In Isaiah 61, Isaiah prophesies that the coming Messiah will bind up the brokenhearted and comfort all who mourn. We should try to emulate him. Another thing, building maintenance. If you have any building maintenance skills, those talents can be put to use either with the building here or with various houses in the community. Bill Walt and others sometimes help with housing repairs in the community. So if you have carpentry or electrical skills or other skills and want to become involved with that work, it's great work. Another thing you can do is visit or write to those missing in church. There are a lot of people who used to go here that no longer attend. Occasionally, Wendy and I think, whatever happened to so-and-so? Did they move? Are they attending somewhere else? Did they just drop out? Visiting them, calling them, emailing them, or just dropping a missed you card could be a very useful ministry. And if keeping up the whole congregation is too much of a chore, you could like take all the people whose last name starts with a particular letter of the alphabet, look them up in the directory. There are a lot of different ways you could do that. And it could make a difference for one or more families. Something else you can do is give rides to church. If you'll notice on Sunday morning, our parking lot has a lot of BMWs and Lexus and Cadillacs. We're generally a pretty well-off congregation. But not all of our members are so well-off. Some live in run-down rented trailers or run-down small apartments and barely make it financially from week to week. And some of those people have a car that's more than a quarter of a century old. And they hope that the old car doesn't break down because they can't afford to fix it if it does. Or perhaps that old car finally did break. They simply don't have a way to get around. They could use a ride. I do know that there are people in that category in our congregation. Something else you can do is speak to and welcome guests at church. One of the things I sometimes hear about some churches are that they're not very friendly. Nobody spoke to me. Well, you can make a point to speak to new people. You can do it in a formal way like Mr. Mack does or like the Williams do at the door. Or you can do it in a less formal way where you're in the halls or in the auditorium. Notice who's new. And go up and speak to them, you know, be friendly with them, find out about them. We try to find ways as a church to reach out to people and find people, but then we have people who freely come to us and show up unannounced in Bible class and at worship. What a great opportunity that shouldn't be squandered. What a great blessing. How much easier to reach out to people who've already reached out to us. These are people who Rob Stevenson perhaps a little crudely refers to as a low-hanging fruit. They're among the easiest and best opportunities for outreach and service. Make them feel welcome is a great ministry. Something else you can do is distribute clothing. and household goods to the poor in the community. Members of the congregation are involved with benevolent activities in different ways, and Lou Ann Stewart is one who's particularly involved with getting clothing and housing goods to those who need them, and I'm sure that she can point you to areas which you could help also with that great work. And before any avenues of prayer have been attempted, a service has been attempted, and after all avenues have been exhausted, you can always pray. God hears our prayer. There are a lot of projects, big and small, in which additional help could probably be appreciated and valued. You could pick from among many others as well, such as helping with baby showers, helping with the pictorial directory, helping with men's or ladies' retreats, helping with the food pantry and the benevolence ministry, helping with the Ramblers ministry, helping with the nursery, helping with vacation Bible school, helping with Lads to Leaders, helping with Stepping Stones, who occasionally these people to help with various things, including such things as reading to the kids. I'm not suggesting that one person needs to get involved in all these things, or even most of them, but I am suggesting that picking some area to dedicate yourself to can make a difference in our church and in the world. Pick one. Pick one person at church to be a friend to, especially one who's on the outskirts or boundaries of the group. Pick one family that's on the edge financially and be willing to give a ride, provide an occasional small gift of money or service or comfort or direction. Pick one non-Christian to become a friend of and eventually invite to church or share your faith with. Pick one child to mentor and to grow through life with. Pick one college student, provide a home away from home to, or pick one WEI student to teach about eternity. You can make a difference. You can change the future. Before we close, I want to offer an invitation. If anybody here who wants to be baptized for the forgiveness of their sins, or needs the prayers of the church, we'd be glad to help you in any of those. We ask you to come forward as we stand and sing.